7th episode. It's been a bit of a pause since our last one. Life got the better of us, and we wanted to do a little bit of recalibration and figuring out what we wanted to do here with the podcast. Today is actually the first time that we're going to do a kind of group roundtable discussion, and so these podcasts, I suspect, as this one did, will get a little bit scholarly. Sometimes you'll be getting a little bit of inside baseball there of the different medicine that we have at Watershed. But today we're talking with Rowan Everard and Melinda Wheeler, both acupuncturists, as well as myself, of course, also an acupuncturist. And we are just digging into some aspects of our practice that people don't know as much about, especially the fact that we're classical Chinese medicine practitioners, which is just a little bit different perspective from some other types of providers. And so we discuss that here in the podcast. And we're also talking about the autumn from a Chinese medicine perspective in a couple different ways. And we hope that information will just be useful to you as you dig into this season. We'll be releasing the podcast on Thursdays from now on instead of Wednesdays. So watch for that change, and probably we'll only be releasing about two every month so that we can spend a little bit more time on them. But sometimes we may throw an extra one in there. So thanks a lot. You can find the podcast at watershedwellnesspodcast.com or through our website. And we're also available on iTunes and Stitcher and some of the other podcast repositories. If there's one that you'd like us to be on and we're not there yet, just let me know at eric@watershedwellnesspdx.com or eric@watershedwellnessastoria.com, and I'll try to get it fixed up. So enjoy the podcast, and we'll see you soon. Okay, so we're ready for this inaugural Chinese Medicine Roundtable podcast. It's very exciting. We're all in the same room, which hardly ever happens. And I want to do just quick introductions, even though everybody, of course, knows us all, because we're quite famous on our podcast. Rowan, would you just tell us how you're doing this morning?
I'm doing great. I'm drinking coffee and...
Yes, hazelnut creamer.
Hazelnut creamer, which I thought would be delicious, but it's not. But it's
okay.
Fine.
It's okay. And Melinda, why don't you tell us how you're doing this morning?
I'm doing great. Yeah. I'm very excited that we're all here making this happen, and... I think it's going to be a great Wednesday.
Is it Wednesday?
Okay. It is. Only Wednesday.
Okay, all right. We wanted to, we'll talk about a few topics. The idea with these kind of roundtable podcasts, which is different than like an interview, which we've done several interview podcasts, which are fun. But one of the things I think about the clinic that's interesting, you know, as opposed to if we three had practices on our own, is the togetherness, you know,
absolutely,
and the ability to talk to each other. And I think... from a patient perspective, it can be nice to hear people who kind of have a similar medicine or whatever to all talk about similar topics. It kind of differentiates us, but also shows kind of how we're united. And we are united. We all went to the same school, obviously, and so we share a lot of things. And that's kind of what we want to talk about today to the greatest extent. One of the hardest things to communicate to patients, I think, is how we're different. People who are trained at National University of Natural Medicine in Portland and a couple other institutions in the country have a perspective called classical Chinese medicine, right, which is specifically a term or a reference that is meant to differentiate us from traditional Chinese medicine, or TCM. So all of us have had experiences of people saying like, oh, you practice TCM, and us being like, because it's a different term. So, and I think patients don't understand that, of course. I was hoping we could talk about it. So I thought we could just go around and each of us just talk about what that term means to us, you know. And you all are at different places in your practice than I was. You had a very different educational experience than I did, so I think we'll have some interesting insights. Then we'll move on to something else. I'll just start out since I'm already rambling. For me, the key, well, first of all, the whole thing about terminology is kind of a red herring. Like, it doesn't really matter. Like, what you call yourself is kind of irrelevant.
Yeah.
But it definitely, I think, denotes an approach, an overall perspective on the medicine. And what I have learned over my now almost 10 years of practicing it is one of the most important things is that we value the lineage basis of the medicine, that we don't try to make everything standardized and in a protocol, but that we acknowledge what is, I think, the greatest strength of Chinese medicine, which is that it takes a diversity of opinions and viewpoints and unites them under a single kind of theoretical framework. You know, that we're all we can all talk to TCM providers very easily about spleen chi deficiency and whatever. But we will have a different take on that. So that's one of the things for me, is just that there's that lineage basis, which is, I mean, represented in this room pretty strongly in some ways. And then the other thing that besides just that we use the classical text, which I think is actually the most boring thing about us, is that that there's a demand for a higher level of scholarship and strategic thinking. Like, we're expected not to try to simplify cases down to their lowest common denominator and render a protocol, but instead to actually fully understand the breadth and depth of the person in front of us and to render a completely unique treatment for them in that moment. You know, and so it's I don't know if y'all watch Star Trek. Do you? You have to say yes because you work for me. But if you've watched the most recent ones, which are incredible, thank you very much.
Sure.
There's a statement made that literally changed my life, because it's the defining feature of my life, which is one of the characters says, "Context is for kings." And he was making this, he was actually making a kind of sketchy point in the context of the episode. But for me, that's really the nature of this medicine, is that it's context medicine. Mm-hmm. That I could not care less what your biomedical provider told you. I could not care less what your other acupuncturist did. Like, I literally do not care. Like, don't even tell me. Because it's all about you. Mm-hmm. As the patient, it's all about where you are right now, not even what brought you there, but where are you right now,
uh-huh.
And how can I understand that? So that's, for me, what it's about.
Yeah.
Who's going to follow that up?
I don't know. Serious. One of the things that you said that I thought was, that sparked one of the differentiations between what I wasn't trained in traditional Chinese medicine, which is funny because traditional seems like it's, you know, traditional, and then you're like, classical. Well, but I wasn't trained in TCM. But one thing that I do notice is specifically with regard to heat and cold, like how TCM practitioners look at heat and wanting to take it away, whereas we're trying to figure out, why did the heat get there? What happened to make it happen? And how can we repurpose it? Like, at all costs, we're trying to repurpose that heat, because we understand that the body is not going to do something willy-nilly. Like, we're trying to figure out what is happening here that's creating this.
Right.
And then really getting to the root. And that's not to say that, you know, some TCM practitioners wouldn't do that too, but what I often experience is people say, oh yeah, well, I was on this formula when I was on a cold. And I'm like, whoa, that's going to make your future colds not so great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, there's that understanding of the primacy of yang.
Yes,
and that we
exactly.
have to... Yeah, so that's a conversation for another day, but...
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just think that it's important to understand that traditional Chinese medicine, basically, as a historical process, was the Chinese government, getting as many Chinese medicine practitioners into a room as possible and
uh-huh.
asking them, what do you all agree on?
Right.
And then codifying all the things that, everyone said, checked the box for, and then slicing away all of the other things in which there was some disagreement.
Right.
And saying, here's our medicine.
Right.
Here it is.
Right.
Which, I understand the appeal.
Sure.
Right? Totally. If I were in charge of a centralized government of a country that is as diverse and complicated as China, and I was I want to present our medicine to the world as some kind of coherent thing.
Right.
I get it, right? But the problem with that is that every lineage speaks this slightly different language about the same things.
Yeah.
And so when you cut away the places where people are using different language, you get rid of the nuance, you get rid of the depth of each individual tradition, and you come out with something that's not really actually coherent. That's sort of just it's almost like a bunch of talking points about Chinese medicine, and then you ask more follow-up questions, and people are like, I don't know. I never read the actual book, so I'm not sure. And that's not actually as effective clinically, and it also leaves people feeling I don't know if this medicine works, really.
Yeah.
So I think it may be a little bit backfired.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, and I think a really important point in what you said was, I think one of the most important things to notice about traditional Chinese medicine is that it was an attempt at standardization. And that attempt at standardization, the Chinese are no, especially ancient Chinese, they were about standardization. Yeah. Like Qin Emperor was about the standardization, right? Like it's not like a new thing, but when Western medicine,
the Meijing
came out of a project like that. Exactly. But the difference was the moment, the political moment, and kind of the moment, the worldwide geopolitical moment that Western medicine is standardized. That's like, in fact, its nature, its deepest nature is that it attempts to speak about average patients and average situations and render a treatment that would be safe and effective in the majority of those situations.
Right.
That is not how Chinese medicine works. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, it's a fundamental, like, when people try to integrate the two, I'm so confused because there's just no place where, in my opinion, that where their theoretical backings even lay close to the same place. You know, in Western medicine, the whole idea is that we are trying to find a universal standard that can apply safely to a variety of people, no matter how old they are. You know, I mean, of course, there's age and dependence and stuff like that. But it takes the context out.
Right.
And Chinese medicine, in fact, goes almost too far in contextualizing, right, to the point of like, oh, what earthly branch is for this student? And like, what point is related to that? You know, I mean, it can go too far, right? But anyway, it's important that standardization is part of it. And I just want to say, for those people who are listening who consider themselves TCM, again, I'm not disparaging people who call themselves one thing or another, because really it's an approach. I've met TCM trained practitioners who practice more classically than anything.
Yeah, well, and they're practicing within a lineage.
Right,
that's
it's an idea.
Coherent.
Exactly.
Right, it's just
that,
like, when you get thousands of practitioners into a room, and then you try to say, like, here's what we all think. There's going to be only a couple things.
It's going to be like, chi is a thing. And
yeah.
That's like it.
That's
all.
Pretty much. I also want to say, though, just before we move on, that I agree with you that it can be difficult to integrate the two of them, but, like, this medical research in China, particularly around how to treat different illnesses either comparing Western biomedicine or with both, does seem like it is fruitful and there are places where we can work together.
Sure. Working together is, I mean, this is a whole different conversation. To me, there's a world of difference of two traditions speaking to each other and trying to integrate the two medicines. Like, because it's akin, you know, I mean, you rip the culture you rip the guts out of Chinese medicine to make it even be able to actually be integrated in the sense of like, oh, what do you do for IBS?
Yeah.
Well,
right. Yeah.
Show me your patient.
Right.
You know, and
really,
I'll tell you
really
what I do. And
yeah.
And of course, we all know that we can say things. We can say, well, with IBS in general, there's probably going to be a spleen involvement, right?
Yeah, sure.
But I just had an IBS case the other day that you can treat the spleen until you're blue in the face. It would make no difference at all because it's a gallbladder situation.
Yeah.
So you know, it's just one of those things. Like,
I
always have to make the strongest possible statement because I'm the soapboxer. But you know, of course, there's places where biomedicine, I mean, I work with biomedical providers all the time. But the point is integration. It's a completely different thing. You know, it's assimilation is what it
and
is.
And a respect for both. Like, that is something that could be fruitful also.
Yeah.
Having that understanding that both are legitimate.
And to understand that we can most respect each medicine by understanding where it comes from.
Exactly.
Its context.
Right.
You know, like
right.
When I demand that biomedicine look like Chinese medicine, it's going to fail every time.
Yeah.
I'm going to think that it's worthless, but it's clearly not.
Certainly.
So,
yeah.
Any more about classical Chinese medicine? Are we done? We're done. We figured that all out.
Yeah, we've got it.
Get on that.
All taken care of.
Centuries-long argument resolved.
Yeah, great. So let's move on. I do want to say, though, that one of the things I think that we would all agree that classical Chinese medicine pays attention to in a way that's a little bit more intensive than other types of Chinese medicine is time. It pays attention to the influence of time in a serious way. Now, you know, all TCM practitioners, I think, learn the organ clock, and they understand, like, oh, high tide, low tide, and this whole thing. But that's kind of where it ends, right? And almost all of it boils down to if you wake up between 3 and 5 a.m., like, that's it. And actually, that's just blood sugar. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's not that interesting. You rarely have somebody waking up at 1 a.m. and you're like, oh, I wonder, you know, like, that's not a thing.
Right.
And so in Chinese medicine, in classical Chinese medicine, we tend to obsess a little bit over time, even to the point of incorporating astrological thinking, which is something some people do. But again, like the seasonal variations, that's something that pretty much all Chinese medicine providers agree on, right? Like you'll hear them all talking about fall, you'll hear them all talking about spring, and there's a lot of shared understanding there. I think that does come from the Neijing. Like the Neijing's pretty clear on what the seasonal energies are about.
Yeah.
So we're kind of in the guts of autumn right now, although one wouldn't know in Portland from the way it's been the last couple weeks. But what do we think about autumn? Tell me about fall. Yo.
It's a lung time.
Lung time. What? Why lung time?
Because it's metal season, and the lung is a metal organ.
That's right. That's what people say.
That's what people say.
Yeah. But do we call it large intestine season?
Oddly, no.
Weird.
Because the large intestine is the other metal organ.
Yeah, so two metal organs. So in Chinese medicine, the organ systems are divided up in various ways, many, many ways. And one of those ways is by the elements. And there's four fire organs and then two of the rest. So there's five elements total. And lung and large intestine are metal organs. But typically, we call autumn the metal season or the lung season, which is a weird thing in and of itself. But what else about it? Like, how does that make any sense? How does that make sense to patients? How do you describe metal and lung and autumn to patients, if you do? Either of you.
You can describe it as the time in which nature is beginning to go back inside. So there's letting go happening, which is a metal descending action. So leaves are falling off of trees. You can see around you that the seasons are changing. It's getting colder. We're going inside more, both literally and metaphorically. Yeah, that's one of the basic, super basic ways that you can describe it.
Or, like, people talk about killing time, like the, metal axe or a metal sword that cuts down the leaves and the plants, and also animals, right? You know, or even the horns, the shedding, you know, all of that kind of stuff.
Right, fall was the traditional time to kill prisoners in China.
Great,
When people were doing that.
Yeah, when they did that. And I think a lot of people feel around autumn like a tendency to kind of consolidate things. Uh-huh. You know, like pre-holidays is part of it, and then like summer is always so active and busy for everybody that it's like kind of you'll hear people say like, "Oh, I'm so glad summer's over so that I can stop doing all the things." You know, so there's that letting go of frenetic activity in the summer, which is worse in some years than others. What else about metal?
Well, the Neijing talks about how, like, during the season of the organ, you have to take care of that organ because it's going to be tested in the following season.
Oh, okay.
So there's this sort of, like, it's going to be hard on the lung
in the winter.
Fall, but then also especially in the winter. So if you take good care of the lung during the fall, you'll, like, reap the benefits during the winter of, like, not getting a plague disease.
Right, which would be good.
Yeah. I always enjoyed not having plague.
So. Yeah. Every day that I don't have a plague, it's great.
Yeah. So there's this question about, like, is it the season of its, because it's in its element, is it, like, strongest in that season, or is it most vulnerable in that season?
That's an interesting question.
Are we building something up, or are we, like, spending something in a certain way?
Right.
I don't feel super clear about that.
Right. Well, I mean, I think...
Oh. No, go ahead.
No, you please.
Well, I was just thinking, like, about spending or using, or there's a lot of lung things happening in the clinic right now. I mean, for sure, it's a challenging time for folks' lungs at this time.
Makes
so I
sense.
Think we are expending some, but also to attend to it, right?
Yeah.
This is the time to attend to it.
Well, and there might be something there just about, and I don't have a fully formed thought about this, but there might be something there more deeply about Chinese medicine in general, which is to say that it's almost kind of, if you will allow the term, occidental type thinking to say, like, there's weakness and strength,
mm-hmm.
that those two things are separated.
Right.
But in fact, there's just metal time, which is both strong and weak.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's just all
and
happening.
It's attention or it's energy, and that energy sometimes creates vulnerability, and it sometimes creates strength. But we know, like, for instance, people are getting colds more often, right? And you'll have patients coming in, especially right during the seasonal transition, they'll be like, my lungs hurt because they're breathing in cold air for the first time, and the lungs are used to everything being all happy, and they're a little mad. And we call the lung the sensitive organ because it responds very quickly to dampness and dryness, coldness and heat, and so it's the most vulnerable at transitional times. Right, and so the summer
especially
was particularly difficult for us in Oregon and in the West broadly because of all the fires, and so people's lungs are even more challenged than normal, although I'm not seeing as severe colds as I did last year, but that's, you know, again, that's time, that's the flow of time. Every year is different, you know. Last year was a little bit more fiery, there was a lot more yellow and green and infected kind of things going on, and I guess the rooster year is a little bit less about that, but
more chill.
although, I don't know,
more chill in the lung.
So that's the general Chinese medicine understanding: metal, lung, fall, all those things, those symbols go together, and that's something I hope we'll talk more about, because of course we're talking way above anybody who is brand new to Chinese medicine, right? Like, there's so many things we've said that that are need more explanation. But I think the general idea, I think the reason we talk so much about fall is because it does make sense because of the killing, like you were saying, and like the leaves falling, and it all feels like you, it's easy to relate, whereas maybe like the earth season's a little harder to explain. But you know, so
I also think there's this element of, because of the energy of like consolidating and also like preparing for winter, that people are more apt to like hunt around for information about how do I prepare for the winter in the fall. So I feel like people are more likely to read an article that's like, uh-oh, winter's coming, what do I do? Versus like, spring is here, yay, I want to read articles about it. Like,
no,
there's not that sense of urgency.
Like,
I'm not collecting acorns in the spring.
Right.
Like, I don't care.
Right. And also, for many people who have been through at least the American school system, I don't know about other school systems, but we're all used to like, somehow paying more attention in the fall because it's when school starts. And, and then for parents, of course, when fall comes, it's the first time they've had time to do anything because their kids have been home all summer. So so I think that has part of it. But, you know, there's other ways of looking at fall in Chinese medicine. And so, and we don't need to go deep into this, but, you know, as I mentioned before, there's this organ clock, which I'll, with the podcast, I'll put a link to an image of it so people can see it. In classical Chinese medicine, and one of our teachers, Heiner Fruhoff in particular, has a bit of an obsession with the organ clock, and he's done an intense, like 20, you know, plus years of intensive research on this stuff, and has, you know, a whole website full of information about it. And he goes into a lot of depth, and we're not going to go into that much depth, but November-ish is when we start to transition into what we call the triple burner, and it's a funny thing to do on a podcast because nobody knows what that means. But the triple burner is the only Chinese medicine organ system that doesn't have a direct and obvious physical correlate, right? So gallbladder, heart, lung, bladder, all these things we know. Like, we can see them, we can get them in the body, we can see the anatomy. The triple burner is, or sun jiao, is not something that has that, and it's been variously related to lymph or the interstitial spaces, or some people will just talk about it being part of the fluid dynamics of the body, and there's all different ways to talk about it, but actually in Chinese medicine it's fairly important. It's something that we, I mean, I think probably 80% of my patients get some triple burner work at all times, which is, you know, in a whole different conversation, but the energy of the triple burner vis-a-vis fall, what can we say about that? Anything? Got anything?
Well, we're consolidating, like, we're moving all these things around to prepare for winter.
Sure.
And the triple burner is all about communication, particularly of water and fire,
mm-hmm.
between all of the different organs and all the different parts of the body. So it could be particularly in terms of, like, fluid dynamics.
Yeah.
As we're transitioning from a hot and potentially dry time of summer into different kinds of climates that are cold and whatever in the winter, that organ is doing a lot of extra work to prepare.
To move fluids
and
warmth around.
Help out the lung, you know, help everybody out in that transitional time.
Right.
It's also the 10th month of the year.
Right.
The triple burner.
Right.
Which is doesn't totally line up with ours, but in general.
You mean the Gregorian?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And just, like, thinking about the most, like you were mentioning, the most yang in the most yin. Like, yang,
right.
The most yang, basically, is the triple burner.
Right.
And we know it because it's facilitating or moving through, or the distributor of Yuan Qi,
right.
And we're thinking about that in the context of yang and function.
Right.
But I'm curious to hear more about your thoughts.
Well, I mean, you know, and again, like, this is, like, maybe too much for a kind of a patient-focused podcast, but...
Maybe not.
I mean, think about the hexagram. The hexagram is the... And think about when we think of triple burner in classical Chinese medicine, we think of sleep,
mm-hmm.
right? So what the across the clock, so there's a lot of ways to look at these items on the clock, but across the clock, if you go directly, like, from, you know, 12 to 6, but it's not 12 to 6, if you go across the clock, who's paired with triple burner?
Spleen.
Right. And so that, again, brings us to fluids, and not just fluids, but distribution of resources throughout the body, which is so important in the fall to get things to the surface, to protect your body and all this kind of stuff. But then there's also the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, triple burner is the most yang, but it's also the most yin in the sense that yin is about darkness. And
mm-hmm.
that's when we're supposed to go to bed, is the hours of triple burner on the actual clock. And so it's all about this time of going deep within. So for me, you know, we all talk about that around winter solstice, right? Because it's legitimately the darkest time of year.
Right.
But from a Chinese medicine perspective, the energetics of that have already come into place.
Yeah.
We are already in that time. Like, we should already
exactly.
be in the depth of our inner space right now.
Uh-huh.
But so many of us, just last night, Halloween, did this huge explosion of energy outwards. And so I really feel like a lot of trouble that people have on the other side of the clock, like spleen time, as they approach summer solstice, which for my patients is a traditionally very difficult time of year. Like, people have all kinds of symptoms that come, get really angry around that time of year. And I think part of it is because we don't shut down in triple burner like we need to. And
mm-hmm.
so I think it's just another example of that. And so, you know, from a patient perspective, like, now is the time to be going inside, you know,
mm-hmm.
and to be preparing for those celebrations we have at solstice, but to be, it's not a celebratory time, it's a killing
no.
time.
Well,
know?
And traditionally, you know, Samhain, the holiday from which we get Halloween,
mm-hmm.
is the time where you honor the dead,
right?
And where you held a vigil throughout the night, you tell stories about the dead, you basically have a gathering where you celebrate them, but it's not a party.
No.
It's a time of mourning,
yeah.
but like a time of togetherness in mourning and
right.
of going deep.
Right.
And it's a strange element of American culture that we've turned that into like this
party.
Zany party crazy time.
I know.
Where we like wear masks and run around. So
I think too, like, that it's generally the descent that the triple burner is asking for. You have to have enough yin to hold that yang, like we were talking
yeah.
about just a second ago. And I think that's why insomnia or sleeplessness or having that those issues with sleep is because there's no... Well, people aren't practiced at it either. Like, there's no...
at yinning?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there's not that respect for the descent. Like,
no.
It's much more about... And we have that in clinic all the time where we're like... constantly talking to folks about what, you know, as a gesture, if you will, descent, as in going inside or looking inside or thinking about like ancestors or that kind of thing, right? That is all important in order to actually have some yang or that exchange between yang and yin on the other side of the clock. Totally.
Well, and the message too, I think it's funny that you say we don't have practice at that, and that is actually the point, is people will always ask me, well, what do I do to be more yin? It's like, well, actually the point is not
right.
to do.
Right.
Like the point is the pause between doing. And so, you know, staring into space or quietly reflecting on, you know, ancestors or whatever it
mm-hmm.
is actually the work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is no class you can take. There's no... you know, yoga move that's going to help you with it. There's no supplement that you can make you more yin. In fact, what it is that you have to draw back from all of the doing that you do. And that's really the thing, you know.
Right.
Just yesterday, a patient was saying, we're working on a similar pathology, pathomechanism. And they were saying, it's so amazing that right now, even in interaction, I will pause. I will have a pause. Sometimes I'll still say yes, even though I know that I shouldn't or don't have enough energy or what have you, but at least I have the pause.
Right.
Like, at least I'm acknowledging that there's a space where I can kind of make that decision, because so many people don't even think about it. The answer is yes. They just keep going and
always more
are never
always
taking
more.
That time.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess we need to wrap it up because it's almost half an hour, but I think the message of this last little part, and it really is kind of a uniquely classical perspective in a sense, although, again, all Chinese medicine practitioners can benefit from it. It just so happens to be our particular obsession. Is that the triple burner, that the organ clock teaches us that what we should be communicating to our patients and to ourselves as humans and practitioners is a sense of inward and downwardness and a sense of letting things go, letting things die, and certainly not starting things. This is not a moment for starting some grand new venture or business or something like that. But a time, I mean, 1 month. Can we give ourselves 1 month out of the year just to relax and just let it all go, you know? And that the benefit of that may well be seen in the summer. Like you were saying, you know, it's like you protect the lung in the fall, then the lung is healthier in the winter,
mm-hmm.
which means that your spring is better, which means your summer is better. You have to start it somewhere.
Long game.
Yeah. Let's think the long game. Like,
right.
You want to live past this year? Let's keep it going. So
right.
I think it's a good message for everybody as we move into what can be a rather busy season with holidays for many folks. And, you know, to remind yourself to give yourself time to, like, space out. Or
totally. Well, it can be a practice to cultivate in a sort of counterintuitive way. But like all of the meditative traditions in every culture have this focus of, like, you learn to take time to just
totally.
Hang out and be.
Totally.
But it's actually something you have to learn how to do.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
Which is not necessarily intuitive.
And can be really anxiety provoking for folks.
Oh my gosh.
At first.
Absolutely.
And so it's like a really slow process, and there's a lot of respect for that, because like I said, there's no major messaging that's happening for people elsewhere other than on this wonderful podcast telling people to rest.
Right.
No, that's true.
And
that's true.
There's so many, I you know, people are always asking me, like, which tradition should I look into for this? And there's so many that, like, I just think whichever one appeals to people most
totally.
Is the one that they should do. You
know,
whether they want to do walking meditation or they want to do sitting meditation or they just want to go on a walk.
Right.
That's all great.
Right.
Whatever it looks like for you, just, like, building time into your day where you're just being in whatever way that feels good for you is the, like, sort of first step.
Yeah. And just as a side note, just to speak to that, is that, you know, many people's religious traditions, major monotheistic religious traditions, the liturgical cycle has quiet built in.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
the whatever tradition it is, there is usually some time where the somebody has died or there is some kind of pause in the situation where everybody has to look inward. So it's like, you know, if you have a tradition like that, really pay attention to those parts and not just the bright, shiny parts that are a little bit more active, right? We have, especially Americans, we have this habitual, we just reach for the yang so quick. You know, that's just what we're about. It's like, what can I do? What can I do to make things different?
Right.
It's
the,
like,
classic,
sometimes,
like, person balancing their checkbook while they're at church.
Yeah, 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 totally. So, any last autumnal tidings for our listeners?
I just think it's worth it. Like, I just want to say, I think it's worth it to take some of that time. And even if it feels uncomfortable at first, and even if it feels a little bit counterintuitive, like, yang is function, and giving your body that ability to have that regenerative moment, even if it's 5 minutes. Like, I'm not talking 20 minutes twice a day. It's not about being incredibly exacting about it. Like, that would be counterintuitive, as you were saying, Ron. That would be too much. But just exploring it, you know, being free with it, I think that could be useful.
Yeah,
agreed. Well, thanks, y'all.
Thank you
for being here, and we'll try again sometime soon.
Great.
All right.